Thanks for inviting me into your home, long haul truck, RV, camper, taxi, your parents' well-appointed basement with the simulated wood paneling, electric fireplace, and the painting of dogs playing poker, your loft, that greasy spoon just off the interstate, and your cabin in the woods. Welcome to Coast AM, the very best in late-night talk radio. I'm Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie, and tonight, this morning, we're coming to you live from Old Thornhill Village, just north of Toronto. Is it the unimaginably vast system of caves? Is it the sinkholes beneath the surface of western Kentucky, specifically the Pennyroyal Plateau region of Kentucky, that has earned the Bluegrass State the Capital of High Strangeness title? What's the deal with the Kentucky anomaly, the largest spike of geomagnetic energy in the Western Hemisphere? It's even captured the attention of NASA. Reports of spatial distortions. Then there are the unsolved murders, disappearances, and history of violence, the cults, cryptid sightings, Black Panther sightings, Bigfoot, dogmen, goatmen, and UFOs, alien abductions, and let's not forget the Hopkinsville goblins. And then there's the case of the mysterious, sinister Mr. X, the alleged ex-Nazi intelligence officer who settled in Somerset, Kentucky, purchased the Mount Victory coal mine, became one of the richest men in America, and was later named as a conspirator in the assassination of President Kennedy. How could so much mystery, murder, mayhem, and paranormal activity be crammed into one small region of Appalachia? Nathan Isaac is the host of the Pennyroyal podcast, and he spends most of his waking hours trying to document all of this weirdness. Tonight, over the next 2 hours, he'll share as much of this with you as he possibly can. Now, it might just be too much high strangeness to contain within the allotted 2 hours, and so I fully expect this theme to spill over into open lines. Is Western Kentucky deserving of its status as the capital of high strangeness in America? Or is it the Hudson Valley, the high desert, the Pacific Northwest? Now, I'm not intending on adding to the divisiveness in America, but perhaps during open lines, we can conduct a friendly competition. Which region of America is stranger than Western Kentucky? Does your county have a local monster? Is your lake or river inhabited by some legendary leviathan? What hairy bipedal hominid has been spotted stomping around in your local forest? Now, speaking of weird, Coast to Coast's very own curator of high strangeness and news editor of coasttocoastam.com and the host of the pioneering paranormal podcast, Banal of America, Tim Banal is here. Hey, Tim, how are you?
Hey, Richard, good to talk to you again. It's been way too long, man.
It has been. Have you been avoiding me?
No. Just how the schedule shakes out.
All right, we'll go with that. I wouldn't blame you. Okay. Well, you have speaking of high strangeness, you've brought a manila envelope full of them, chock full of them. We have this curious, I guess we'll call it a true crime case in Australia that goes back decades involving someone named the Somerton Man. What's going on here?
Yeah. And I haven't really checked the deeply into the Coast Archive, but I'm pretty sure they could do a whole show on this if we haven't done one before. So I'll give you a really brief sketch on this this case. Back in 1948, the body of a man was found on a beach in Australia near the city of Adelaide. He was clad in a suit and tie, and he had a suitcase with clothes that had all the tags removed. And sewn into one of the pockets of his clothes was a scrap of paper with the Farsi words "Taman Shud," which means "it's finished." He had no identification on him. No one knew where he came from. No one knew where he came from, and really, they couldn't really figure out how he died. And that's been the case for the last 70-plus years, ever since 1948. So it's kind of like a fixture in true crime circles. And there's it's one of those rabbit hole cases. You know, you start looking into it, and, you know, there's been books and movies and all kinds of stuff on it. It's a real iconic case. So we love when these mysteries get solved. We're close. This one might be a breakthrough. Incredibly, they've exhumed the body of the Somerton man, officials in Australia. And they're going to do a whole new forensic analysis and hope to extract some DNA from the body. And if they can get enough genetic material, you know, there's a possibility. We've seen this with other true crime cases, some kind of genealogical investigation. They might be able to connect the dots and figure out who this person was. We may finally get a name for the Somerton man.
Wow. Very cool. A little morbid, but very, very cool. Now, this is one of my favorite mysteries, Tim. This is the Lost Amber Room, which I guess was stolen away by the Nazis during World War II from, I believe, St. Petersburg in Russia, right?
Yeah, yeah, a palace in Russia. And, you know, it's funny, Richard. I was thinking to myself tonight before the show, I said, I think I've talked about this with Richard before. So I Googled, went through, I keep all my emails. So I went through my emails and I looked, and apparently we had talked back in 2019 on the show about a different search for the Amber Room. So, as you said, this ornate set of gold and amber panels have pilfered from a Russian palace by the Nazis and then vanished in the chaos at the close of World War II. And much like in 2019, every few years, they think they might know where it is. This is a particularly interesting installment, you could say, of the mystery. Because back in the fall, this past fall, they found a sunken Nazi steamer ship off the coast of Poland, which departed from a city that was the last city, Königsberg, where the Amber Room had been seen. So, and it was packed full of stuff. They did a dive back in December, and they found several chests that had special rubber seals, which they think indicated that they were being used to transport precious cargo. Now, it came out later, I found this out this week, that during that dive, they saw picture frames and rotting canvases. That's what the divers said. So, at the very least, they think that some of these pilkers, it's not just the Amber Room, of course, there's all kinds of pilfered artwork that the Nazis stole during World War II. So there's a suspicion that in this sunken steamer ship that there could be the Amber Room and there could be other stuff that went missing during World War II. So I'd say it's promising. I'm more excited about this than I am the cases where they dig up like a bunker somewhere in a forest in Poland. More often than not, that happens every few years and you don't see anything. So
wow, one, it sounds like we could be getting close to finally laying to rest the mystery of the missing Amber Room. Fantastic. All right, stay on top of that one, Tim.
Yeah, yeah. So two classic mysteries, you know, good developments this week. And then the last one here, I love introducing people to new creatures. This one, it's not necessarily new, but it's one I'd never heard of. Lake Pepin. In Lake City, Minnesota, Lake Pepin is apparently, allegedly, the home to a lake monster dubbed Pepe. And I had never heard of this, but apparently they've been talking about this creature for decades, if not centuries. It dates back to Native Americans living in the region, so these tales have been handed down generation after generation. Well, a businessman in Lake City, he actually launched this 7 years ago. This is the first I've heard about it. He has put up $50,000 for proof that Pepe exists, and it's brought a lot of people to the town. The reward still has not been claimed, so it's a good time, I guess, to bring it up here. People want to travel this summer. They want to go somewhere. Maybe you can go to Lake City, Minnesota, and search for Pepe. And if you're wondering, how does one collect a bounty on a lake monster? Well, this is the complicated part. This is why it's so tough. You can't just take a picture of it. You have to get a piece of Pepe. You have to get a fin or some skin or something that can be DNA tested at the University of Minnesota Biology Department. And if it's an unknown species residing in the lake, then it is Pepe, and you win the $50,000. So it's
or a fang.
It's difficult.
I suppose you could produce a fang for the bounty.
I think that would work. Yeah.
You'd have to get awfully close. Well, this thing apparently is like 100 feet long, my lord.
It's a pretty big creature. So you know, it'll be interesting. You have to be pretty daring to try and get a piece of a leg monster, but for $50,000, if you make it out alive, it's a good deal, I guess.
Well, Tim, you have your assignment on your bike.
I'll be reporting next from Lake City in Minnesota, right?
Okay. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thanks a lot, Richard.
Great talking to you again. Tim Banal, news editor up at coasttocoastam.com. Now, I don't know about you, but when it comes to the unexplained, and I don't know, let's say strange noises in the middle of the night, scratching and clawing sounds behind your bedroom walls, the sound of a bouncing ball in the attic, maybe an angry snarl in the bushes behind your house, American Gothic novelist John Bellairs said it best, unexplained noises are best left unexplained. Welcome to the Audio Imaginarium. Come on in, weary traveler, hang your cloak on a peg, grab a stool, and come gather around the fire. There are stories to be told, and you are among friends. I'm Richard Serrett, sitting in for George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Why don't you stay a while? Nathan Paul Isaac is a writer, filmmaker, and host creator of the Penny Royal Podcast. A native of Kentucky, he's been researching the folklore, mystery, and high strangeness of the Bluegrass State for over two decades. In addition to the Penny Royal Podcast, Nathan films and produces the music series Summer Sessions. Hey, Nathan, welcome to Coast AM. How are you?
Hey, Richard, how's it going? You doing okay?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm great. Excited to talk tonight.
Hey, likewise. So, where is Penny Royal, and what is Penny Royal?
Well, the Penny Royal region, it's a plateau in central Kentucky that stretches from the Appalachian Mountains in the east, west all the way to pretty much Hopkinsville, and then north to Lexington, where the bluegrass is. So, it's pretty much the central region of Kentucky, but it encapsulates all kinds of, you know, the Mammoth Cave system runs all the way beneath the Penny Royal, all the way into eastern Kentucky. So it's a pretty big region. It's kind of a weird triangle of sorts, you know.
Right, right. And so you mentioned the caves, a lot of sinkholes in that area as well, I understand.
Yeah, so the actual geology of the area is very, it's made of, it's called a karst region. So there's a lot of sinkholes, you know, limestone that's eaten away by water. It's created tons of cave systems. We've actually got underneath Pulaski County, which is where I'm located, there is the Sloan Valley Cave System, and it's the 13th largest in North America. So just tons and tons of caves, lots of weird subterranean spaces, you know.
Right. And what is the Kentucky anomaly we hear so much about? What's going on there?
Yeah, so when I first moved down to this area, and I'm not originally from, you know, Pulaski County. I'm from further east in the Appalachian Mountains. But when I moved here, where my wife's family's from, I was doing some research actually on Sedona and had read and seen some research that Sedona had this huge spike of geomagnetic energy, and that there was a lot of quartz there. And so I thought, well, you know, I can figure out if this is true or not. And there were all kinds of reports of UFO sightings in Sedona at the time. And I thought, well, you know, could that be affecting people's, you know, brains, causing them to see UFOs? So I decided, you know, I could pull a map from NASA, a satellite map, and look to see where all the spikes of geomagnetic energy were. And so when I pulled the map up, I used Google Maps and or desktop, and you can actually drop these files from NASA over it and get all kinds of different satellite overlays. And so I dropped it in there, and sure enough, Sedona lit up. There was an area in southern Alaska, and then this area in the southeastern United States, in Kentucky. I zoom all the way down, and it's Somerset, Kentucky. And so, you know, I started looking deeper into this, and it really is a crazy phenomena that NASA has been studying since the late 1970s. And if this particular spike of geomagnetic energy is the largest spike in the Western Hemisphere, and it's so powerful that it actually causes the gravity in this immediate, you know, in the heart of it, to be slightly higher than everywhere else. I just couldn't believe it when I found it, and it radiates out from Pulaski County throughout Kentucky and down into Tennessee too. So, obviously that sort of started me off on this path of wondering, you know, does that have something to do with all of the high strangeness in the area?
Right, right. So, for example, you've mentioned that your wife has had an encounter with something called spatial distortion, which might be related to this spike in geomagnetic energy in Kentucky. What do you mean by spatial distortion? What happened to your wife?
Well, after we moved down here, I think we lived here for a couple of years, and the house we live in, she was coming out of the bathroom. It was the middle of the day, and when she came out of the bathroom, she saw the thermostat on the wall slide 3 feet to the left and then 3 feet down, and then it bounced back into place with sort of like warble effect. And, she kind of freaked out and screamed for me, and, no one thought anything paranormal was happening. You know, she thought she had, something wrong with her brain, and and so I went up there and everything was fine. Well, I think it was almost 2 years after that. And I wish I had recorded the exact time of year. I just didn't think anything about it the first time it happened. But then a couple years later, the same thing happened. In the middle of the day, she came out of the bathroom, and the thermostat slid over 3 feet to the left, down 3 feet, and then bounced back into place. And so I thought, well, does that have something to do with the Kentucky anomaly? And then, I've obviously, because of the podcast and the project, interviewed a lot of people in this region for, folklore and just any stories that they had. And that actually was something that came up, was this, that people would have a story that sounded like a poltergeist story. It's the only strange thing that happened there, but something would float across the room or come off of the shelf and then just drop to the ground. But they wouldn't have any other activity in their house, just that one moment and that one thing. And there were lots of stories like that. I wonder if it has something to do with, that intense geomagnetic energy.
And so are there people from NASA that are, kind of poking around in Somerset or other parts of Western Kentucky with, not Geiger counters, but however you measure, geomagnetic energy. Are they poking around trying to figure out what's going on?
No, actually. When you look at this research, there are only a few papers on it. And obviously the papers are very excited about it. But I remember that one of the particular papers I found was a European publication. And the reviewer of the article, and I forget the journal that was in, mentioned the fact that this is one of those phenomena that has been understudied. That there was some excitement about it in the early 80s when the MagSat project was going on, but by the 2000s, the research into this is kind of waned. There aren't people looking into this more, which I think they should.
Well, It almost sounds like you're living in a funhouse on the Midway, except for the fact that there's also something a little more macabre, dark going on. There's unsolved murders, disappearances, a history of violence, cults also involved. And we're coming up on a break here at the bottom of the hour. We'll talk about all those things, but let's begin with these unsolved murders. I'm not sure if this is really what set you on your journey producing the Penny Royal podcast, but the unsolved murders of Linda Gibson and Cody Garrett back in the early to mid 90s. Is that what started it all for you?
Yeah, actually, it was that. When we had moved down here, I was driving home from work, and I was going around the town square, and there were all these people gathered, and they had these signs in their hands, and they were facing City Hall, and the sign said, "You know you did it." And so when I got
You know home, who did it?
You know you did it.
Oh, okay. Nathan, we're going to leave that right there. A bit of a cliffhanger. Nathan Isaac, host, creator of the Penny Royal podcast, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Sitting in for George Norrie. Great to be with you on a Friday night into Saturday morning. An Ohio woman was left shaken after she exited her local gym following a workout and spotted what she believes was a Sasquatch lurking at the edge of the parking lot. According to a local media report, the eerie encounter occurred late last month as the unnamed witness was leaving Warehouse 24-Hour Gym in the community of Ashland at approximately midnight. While en route to her car, she heard a twig snap and, turning her attention to the area where the sound had originated, was stunned to see an approximately 7-foot-tall creature covered in gray fur. It would appear that the oddity also saw her as it quickly fled the scene with tremendous speed. The incident was so traumatic for the college student, she actually drove to a nearby Bob Evans restaurant and phoned her family in tears. The woman recorded the sighting to them and requested they come and pick her up because she was too distressed to drive her own car home. You can see more of the story in the highlight carousel up at coasttocoastam.com. Back to more of my conversation with Nathan Isaac, the host and creator of the Penny Royal podcast, as we explore high strangeness in Western Kentucky, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, welcome back to Coast AM. Richard Serrett sitting in for George Norrie. Say hello on Twitter at Richard Serrett, S-Y, because I love you, R-E-T-T. And we're exploring unsolved murders, disappearances, a history of violence in Western Kentucky. Nathan Isaac is the host, creator of the Penny Royal podcast. We were talking, Nathan, about the unsolved murders of Linda Gibson and Cody Garrett. You said one of the first things that happened, you wheeled into town, in the town square, people were holding signs or placards saying, "We know you did it." So what's happening there?
Yeah, so when I finally got home, I spoke to my neighbors, and they told me the story of the two victims who had been murdered in 1994. And there were grisly murders. Their bodies were found in a hedgerow. And this is sort of the strange thing about it. their bodies were found in a hedgerow right where the city and county limits were. And so there was this confusion when the bodies were found, whether or not it was the county jurisdiction, the sheriff's department, or if it was the city police. And so the FBI were called in, and it was a very high-profile case here. It had occurred on July the 4th. That was the last time that either one of them was seen, and their bodies were found on July the 7th. And there was just some weird, the way they were found and just the circumstances of it were very strange. And my neighbors, as they were telling me this, also added in that there was this idea that there was a cult involved, right? And that there were, people in power here in town that were involved. And that's why the family had the sign pointed at City Hall, that there was something going on, that there was some, criminal conspiracy that involved people in the murders. Now, that sort of led me into this investigation into the stories surrounding that, the stories about why people believe that there was a cult here, which I don't think there is a cult here or anything like that. But and it turned out, too, that story of the murders had become folklore that had mixed two other crimes, two other murders were mixed in with that story as well. So. But it took researching this to sort of unravel that, to see how it had worked its way into the local, cultural consciousness.
Were those murders ever solved, Nathan?
No, they're still unsolved. Dateline NBC actually came in 2019 on the 25th anniversary. And if anyone has information on the murders, they can go to the Pulaski County Sheriff's Department website, and they've got a tip line there. But there's never been any resolution for the families. There are a lot of rumors about who people think it is. Obviously, there are stories that the sheriff was involved, and you know that files were lost conveniently that caused the case to go on. But you know, those are just sort of the local stories. But the nature of the murders and how strange they were, you know, and the way that they were found, and then the sheriff that was investigating the case, Sam McCatra, was this larger than life figure who flew a helicopter instead of driving a patrol car. And so, amazingly, in 2002, he was assassinated at a fish fry at a political rally in Somerset, actually in Stabbed, Kentucky, in Pulaski County. But that also was sort of a strange, you know, event that had sort of these weird undertones of like a killing of the king ritual. And so there were lots of other disappearances, you know, once we started digging into just crimes in the area. We found all kinds of disappearances, all kinds of unsolved murders. People had been burned alive near the caves here in Pulaski County that we were talking about earlier. And just lots and lots of, like, a long history of violence, poisonings. You know, we found an old story about a group of school children they'd never found out who it was, but someone tried to poison 22 school children in, like, the 1920s. And just tons and tons of very strange stories of murders over the decades.
And that area is also rumored to be kind of a serial killer dumping ground. Is that true?
There have been a few bodies that have been found in the county that were linked to, I forget the name of the serial killer, but from California. They had driven all the way from California to Pulaski County and had dumped a body off of the Fishing Creek Bridge. And I've interviewed some other people that they were focused on researching that aspect of it and had found that there were stories of other murderers who had dumped people here. But, you know, this is right on the edge, where we're at right now is right on the edge of the Daniel Boone National Forest. And so, like, it's a huge, vast wilderness, and there's just a lot of places to, you know, do things that no one would ever find, you know, to put someone's body. So,
right.
It's like the 411 cases. You know, it's just there's a lot of wilderness here.
Right. And what was the murder hotel, Nathan, from the early 1900s?
Yeah, so I was interviewing Rod Zimmerman, who is sort of the local historian. He's a radio DJ, historian of the town, collects all the old pictures, all the old stories. And there's a huge connection between Cincinnati, which is known as Queen City, and then Somerset here in Pulaski County is known as Little Queen City, because there's a rail line that goes from Cincinnati straight down to Somerset. It's kind of a funny thing, too. If you are injured or die on the train tracks here in Somerset, it's considered a murder in Cincinnati because of this easement that they have. But there's been a long connection between Cincinnati and Somerset. And there were stories, Rod told me, in the newspaper from the turn of the century, where there was a hotel here in Somerset, and the mayor and the sheriff had arranged this plot to advertise this motel, as a safe place for unwed women to stop and stay the night if they were traveling south from Cincinnati to Knoxville. And this mayor and the sheriff would murder the women that were staying there. And there were tons of these old news stories about this happening. And weirdly, that mayor is connected to the Pearl Bryan murder, which was one of the most famous murders in U.S. history in the 1800s. Tons of ballads were sung about it. But the murderer was possibly from Somerset, Kentucky. It involves two dental students, Walling and I forget the other guy's name, but Bobby Mackey is the place where they supposedly found, they beheaded Pearl Bryan and supposedly dumped her head at the well at Bobby Mackey's. And there's a lot of paranormal groups that have gone there, but it's rumored that the two dental students were not actually the murderers, and the real true murderer was from Somerset, Kentucky, which is a crazy, crazy rabbit hole.
Right, right. And is it your theory that this, some of this gruesome history might be tied also to the Kentucky anomaly, this high level of electro or geomagnetic energy?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research that that high levels of electromagnetic energy can affect the brain of people. You know, that was my original sort of theory was, you know, that's why people in Sedona maybe were seeing all of these balls of light. You know, it was affecting their perception. But then when we started looking at this area and then the intense geomagnetic radiation, I started to find research in Japan and research, you know, in Europe about, high levels of suicides, you know, upticks in violence, all of these things that they had found associated with this. And the other thing about this area, too, is that there are large quartz deposits and a large amount of quartz. And, you know, the rock of Kentucky is quartz agate. So there's tons and tons of quartz here, especially in this region. And if you take a piece of quartz and you hit it with a really intense electromagnetic or geomagnetic field, it causes something called the piezoelectric effect. And it's this burst of electrical energy. And so, you know, when you look at this area and you look at the amount of quartz and how intense this geomagnetic energy is that's welling up from the earth, it's easy to draw a correlation between the levels of violence here and the mental health issues that are in the area with that anomaly.
And my understanding is that there's also a lot of mental health issues mental health problems in and around Penny Royal. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so, I mean, the whole region, you know, people would probably say that there's a connection between poverty levels and mental wellness. But in this specific area, I think it goes beyond that. Some people that we've interviewed that worked at Kentucky's Eastern State Mental Hospital, which I don't think it's up in Lexington anymore, but it was located in Lexington, Kentucky. And people there, when they found out that you were from Pulaski County, they were like, what's in the water down there? Because 70% of the people in here right now are from that one county. This is a large county. It's a large mass of land, but it also is a pretty big population, especially in the countryside. But there were, you know, I think it was two or three different people that we had talked to that made that mention of sort of being astounded. At that, and again, when you dig into the newspaper archives, you just keep finding all of these crazy stories of people doing and saying things, of this violence, of just weird, you know, just weird mental health stuff.
So I just wanted to confirm I heard you correctly. Did you say 70% of the state mental hospital patients at one point were all from 70% of the patients in the state mental hospital were from Pulaski County?
This is the mid-2000s that the people were working there. So, yeah, it's crazy. So, now, did it change? I'm not sure. But there is a large amount of there are lots of mental health facilities here in Pulaski County as well. And later we can talk about it, too. But definitely the story of Oakwood, at the experimental health facility plays into this. And I think it's worth noting, too, that in Lexington, Kentucky, just an hour north of here, was the federal drug farm, which was an official MKUltra. You know, when all the stuff, you know, hit the fan and the files were exposed, the Congress about the MKUltra program when it shut down, one of the only places that they acknowledged was this federal drug farm in Lexington, Kentucky, and that's where they administered the most LSD experiments in the entire program. So, you know, that's just, you know, like I said, just a little bit over an hour north of here. And then that was in the early 70s. At the same time, this weird state-run experimental mental health facility opened.
Right, that was Oakwood. That's Oakwood,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, we have a few minutes here before the top of the hour. Why don't we talk about this, as you say, this experimental health, mental health facility that was built in Somerset in the early 70s. This was supposed to be kind of a flagship for this new age of mental health in the U.S., right? I guess after the, you know, we're familiar with One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest and the way that sort of the old method of treating mental health patients. This was sort of the new age of mental health, Oakwood. So what happened at Oakwood?
Yeah, so, you know, this was the Vietnam War was raging. You know, the mental health industry in America was viewed very poorly. And so this facility was going to be this flagship of how that was changing and how things were getting better. And so Dateline, again, this is 1973, Dateline's been to Somerset quite a few times, but they came down and they did a special and filmed for a week this new mental health facility. And within 6 weeks of this place opening, an anonymous letter was sent to the governor of Kentucky, the head of the state police, the sheriff here in town, the mayor, and it alleged, and this is all, and anyone can pull these newspaper articles up, it's fascinating, but the letter that was sent from an anonymous employee stated that there was a witch cult operating on the third shift, and they were performing seances and summoning and magic in the tunnels beneath the facility, and that they were burning symbols into the backs of some of the residents. And I was like, oh my God, this is totally, you know, this is like some weird Stranger Things kind of stuff, you know? When we found that, they ended up firing everybody that was working there. But the guy that was running the program, you know, he'd gotten in trouble for, you know, not wearing a suit to work. He was kind of wearing beads, long beard. It was sort of the Esalen Institute angle on this. And the place itself is very weird looking, especially if you look at it from space or from a satellite image. It has a weird shape, almost like a sigil. And a lot of thought went into the design of the place. And I found out, too, from interviewing someone that it was actually supposed to be built in the desert out west. And then they ended up moving it to Somerset for some reason. But they retained the same design. So these cottages that they built are buried slightly down into the ground. And they were like that because of the high winds on the end of the desert. There aren't any high winds here, but they still buried them in the ground and had these tunnels that connected the various cottages together. But yeah, anyone that's interested in this should definitely pull up a satellite image and look at the shape of the place because it'll blow your mind.
The Oakwood Mental Health Facility, again, in Somerset. And we're coming up in a break here, but I just wanted to mention, there were apparently some additional strange occurrences and deaths surrounding Oakwood, stories of high-functioning savants in one of the cottages who were channeling non-human intelligences. Perhaps we can talk about that when we come back. Nathan Isaac is the host and creator of the Penny Royal podcast, kind of a documentary-style podcast, definitely worth checking out. We'll continue to delve into some of the high strangeness of Western Kentucky. Back with more of Coast to Coast right after this.